Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Physics is all around us every day, whether or not we choose to think about it. Every time we pick something up, throw a ball, charge our cell phones, or drive a car. Now a new book aims to get us thinking about exactly what is happening when we do those kinds of things and some of the ridiculous physics-based ways that we might address some everyday problems. Randall Monroe is the author of the webcomic XKCD, and his new book is How To, Absurd Scientific Advice for Common Real-World Problems. Randall, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let's start with what has to be my favorite chapter in the whole book. It's advice on how to be on time, which is a perennial struggle in my household, and you give the two options that most of us think of, either leaving earlier or moving a little bit more quickly along your route to wherever you're going. And then you say, yeah, no, those are too mundane. Here's a third option. Alter the flow of time. And for something that I didn't think was even possible, you managed to write a whole chapter about it. So give us some ideas. If we're not going to leave earlier, we're not going to travel any faster, how can we alter the flow of time to be on time?
Well, time has always been really like fascinating to me because it's very weird. But one way of, you know, there's altering time and then there's altering timekeeping, and the way, because it's weird to realize that like the days of the week are completely a social construct. You know, if people all like fell asleep for some number of days and then woke up and, you know, we didn't have a calendar, a table, astronomical information, like there's nothing about the world that says that it has to be Saturday right now, you know, or Sunday or whatever. And so you can just change it. We could all agree that it was going to be a different time. And the U.S. does this all the time. Twice a year, we change our clocks. We just decide it's now no longer 2 in the morning, it's 3 in the morning. And everyone goes along with it. And that always, you know, seemed really strange to me. And so I started researching, what are the laws around this? If you want to change what time it is, what do you need to do? Who do you need to talk to? And I was surprised to find, like, every country can kind of set its own clocks however it wants. There's no central body that regulates it all. And then everyone who does keeps track of time in different places, like airlines and software developers and stuff, they all just kind of have to do their best to keep up.
There, you have another chapter on how to dig a hole. And again, in this case, you take that to extremes that most of us would never think of, which really made me wonder where your intense interest in digging really big holes actually came from.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I loved to play in the sand as a little kid, and I would dig holes. I always did worry about, you know, I knew that if you dig too big a hole, it can easily, like, surprise and collapse on you. So I was always, I would dig a little ways, you know, but I never wanted to dig them too deep. But I was kind of interested in, like, does the sand keep going? What do you hit if you dig further? And so I got to write a chapter where I could explore that from the safety of the surface.
Now, Randall Monroe, in How To, one of the things that in How To, you are, you know, often walking through the physics and with your comic drawing, your drawing style that you use in XKCD. But in a couple of cases, you turned to perhaps unexpected experts. And I'm thinking in particular of your chapter on how to take down a drone with sports equipment, which, again, there's the question of why one might need to do that. But apparently this led you to Serena Williams' door, and I'm dying to know if she's actually a secret science geek.
Yeah, I was really surprised because this is one of my favorite things about this book, was that I got to reach out to these cool people who I would have assumed had something better to do, but I was really surprised by how enthusiastic people were. When I reached out to them, I had mentioned that I was working on the chapter about tennis, and that, you know, her and her husband had been like, I said, oh yeah, whenever, if there's anything we can do to help, sure. And I had been expecting, I said, well, it would be really cool if I could get some accuracy data on hitting targets with a tennis ball. And I had figured she'd just set up a practice, you know, like put a piece of tape on the wall and videotape herself during practice, you know, take a couple of serves at it. But not only was she willing to help out, but they were like, you know, we've got an actual drone. Do you want us to just try to take down a drone for you? And I was like, yes, please. That's... I will absolutely would love that. And so we got so her husband took a drone that was broken, Alexis, that had a broken camera. And she stood at the end of the court while he flew it around and she served at it, and tried to see how many serves it would take from a given distance to knock it out of the air. And I can confirm experimentally that a tennis ball will absolutely knock down one of those wedding photography drones.
At least when it is served by Serena Williams, that may not be a repeatable result for the rest of us.
Yes, but and also, well, I had a whole model for how accurate tennis serves, different projectiles in different sports are, and I had a guess for tennis serves. And Serena came in, she hit it, I thought it would take 5 to 7 shots, and she got it on the third shot. That might be an outlier, but I think it might just be that Serena is an outlier. So yeah, your mileage may vary.
Another person that you reached out to is test pilot and astronaut Chris Hatfield, looking for advice on how to make emergency landings. What'd you learn there?
I think he's flown 100 different aircraft. He's one of the most qualified pilots alive, and I was really excited to just throw ever weirder situations at him and get to hear, what his thoughts and reaction would be, and we could debate whether the situation made sense or whatever. I thought I'd write a normal chapter about, what I had learned from talking to him. But to my surprise, I had collected a list of ridiculous questions, and I thought I'd start with the most, the least ridiculous one and work my way up, figuring that at some point he would just say, "That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever been asked, and this interview is over," and hang up on me.
So, what was your most ridiculous question?
I discovered that I couldn't stump him. I just kept asking weirder and weirder questions, and instead of debating them, he just gave me the answer. He said, "Here's what I would do in that situation." And he gave it all in a very neutral astronaut air traffic control voice where it sounds like he's just discussing, his plans for the afternoon. And I even got to the weirdest question on my list, which was, "What would you do if you are picked up by a rock, the giant mythical bird, and it's carrying you away? How would you force that to the ground?" And he even did his best to figure out, here's what I would do in that situation, and just laid it all out like he was talking to mission control about the next maneuver.
So, how do you force a giant, mythical, legendary bird to the ground?
Well, he talked a little bit about how any kind of flying creature or flying object has these basic physical constraints, where if you can get your weight too far forward, it's going to tip forward and it won't be able to help diving down toward the ground. And so if you're able to throw your weight around, you can sort of steer it, like he said, like a big angry hang glider. But then he said, and this is all, again, what was so funny for me was that he just sounded like he was discussing a thing he had done 100 times. He said, "Yeah, so you might be able to steer it that way, or if you have some kind of a parachute you can deploy, anything that flies is going to really hate it when you put a lot of drag out there, and it might want to let you go."
Well, Randall Munroe, you describe how to as, and I'm quoting here, a book of bad ideas. I mean, obviously, if you are trying to be on time to an appointment, the better idea is probably to leave earlier rather than attempt to on the fly alter the flow of time or change the legal definition of the day and time. I wonder why you think it is important or worthwhile to think about, write a whole book about, read a whole book about bad ideas.
Well, there are a few reasons. One is that sometimes it's hard to tell what a bad idea is until you've really gone over it. When I'm writing this book, I'm not thinking what's the worst idea I can think of. I'm just trying to think of ideas, and most of them are bad. And so with this, it's like my idea was to take an idea and then like kind of explore it a little bit, because there are some ideas that people have had that definitely sounded really bad right on, the first time they came across them. Like, if you get a bite and it gets infected, putting mold on an infection sounds like the most ridiculous idea imaginable. But that's like how we discovered antibiotics. But most of the ideas in my book are not antibiotics. They're not ideas that secretly turn out to be good. But you can still learn a lot by trying to find out why it is that they're bad. And the things that you learn might be useful for solving some problem later on. And even if it's none of those things, I just think it's really fun.
So, how do you come up with the ideas for, whether it's how to dig a hole or take a drone down with sports equipment? Are you thinking about the physics involved and trying to think about a real-world situation where a certain set of physical, principles might be involved, or are you coming up with the questions first?
For a lot of the questions in how to, I took a simple task and I just tried to brainstorm, you know, if it's something that I have to do a lot and it's kind of mundane, like packing up to move or, you know, throwing a party or whatever, I thought about, okay, what are some alternate ways to do this? And then took that and see where those ideas go. In other cases, I came across a really cool piece of research and I thought, huh, I wonder how this could be useful. There was a, especially there are some US government projects from the Cold War era. There was one where they bought a bunch of soda and beer bottles from convenience stores and then tested nuclear weapons on them. And they had, you know, they had a whole reason where it was about checking to see whether drinks would survive a nuclear attack and be useful as a source of hydration in the, you know, after in the search and rescue efforts. And so I had that in the back of my mind is like, is there a problem that I could solve where it would be helpful to know whether nuclear weapons can break open bottles? And so I managed to find a, you know, I found a place in my in my book where I was able to actually cite this fact.
I mean, that sounds like a situation where the research and the idea in the end are probably pretty ridiculous, but you also give examples where you mentioned the antibiotics, but where the idea that sounds the most ridiculous actually ends up being the best one. And one of those is how NASA got the rover Curiosity onto the surface of Mars.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite examples, partly because I was up late that night, you know, just not too many years ago, watching the feed of Mission Control as the engineers watched nervously as Curiosity plummeted toward Mars. Yeah, they had all these usual ways that they land drones on Mars, with like parachutes and airbags and retro rockets. And because of the size and shape of Curiosity and how thin the atmosphere was, it none of those ideas worked. They all had problems. The parachutes wouldn't slow it down enough. The retro rockets would kick up dust and it wouldn't be able to land. It was too big for airbags. And so they had this idea that really sounded ridiculous, I think even to the engineers who were, you know, coming up with it, which was to have a hovering vehicle that they called a sky crane, which hovered on four rockets, and then it would lower the Curiosity rover, this, you know, car-sized vehicle, on a long tether toward the ground, but it would stay high up, high enough up that it wouldn't kick up any dust. And it had to do all of this on autopilot, dangling, you know, floating in the Martian atmosphere. No one had ever landed a vehicle this way before. And it just did sound like a ridiculous idea, but it was the least ridiculous of the ideas that they could think of because it, you know, the more they looked at every other idea that they thought was good, the more they realized they all had problems and they couldn't find any problems with the sky crane. And so they tried it and it worked. And so I always think like just because an idea sounds ridiculous on the face of it might actually have some merit to it.
You just have to work it out to its final conclusion and see. Randall Munroe is author of the webcomic XKCD. His new book is How To: Absurd Scientific Advice for Common Real World Problems. Randall, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for talking with us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.